And good day, everybody. My name is Glenn Hill.
Jacob Meyer.
And welcome to the Tactical Tennis Podcast. And today we're doing another player overview of the man, the legend, Alexander Zverev Jr., otherwise known as Sasha.
Sasha Zverev, the man himself.
Yes. So, first of all, like, why does this guy have two names? I don't know. Can we talk about that? Do we know?
Okay, so Sasha is just the Russian nickname for Alexander.
That's good to clarify for everybody, because you'll hear him referred to by both names, and it can get a little confusing sometimes, especially because his father is Alexander Zverev Sr., and that's probably part of why the nicknames come along so strongly. So Zverev is a 20-year-old German player who just finished the year ranked number 4 in the world, which is impressive given how the top 100 has been aging consistently. Like, the average age in the top 100 has been getting older and older and older, and the top 10 has been getting older and older and older. And now here we have this 20-year-old who has managed to finish the year not just top 10, top 5.
And he's really broken in with consistent results. And I want to say there's a bit of a target on him in the sense that, like, he's already gained respect as actually being, like, a really good player. This isn't a fluky number 4.
No. I think there's a little bit of fortune in there, but this is the thing to me is, like, the guy would be, you could bring everybody back that was injured this year and he'd still be top 10.
Yes.
And that's saying a lot, given the depth right now in the top 20 in the world. So,
yeah, it'd be really interesting to see how he would do against, like, a healthy Stan Wawrinka, consistently at this point.
Right.
And also even against, like, a healthy Novak and a healthy Andy Murray. Like, I feel like Novak really has the edge on him. Like, he was playing better tennis. But, some of those other guys, like, he might have finished ahead of them, too. We're not so sure. But in any case, he's really good. He's the real deal. Let's break down his game a little bit.
Just, I think, put a little more context there first. This is a guy who comes from a family of tennis players. And I don't mean a family of tennis players of, oh, we used to go down to the local park and hit some tennis balls. His dad was a challenger-level pro player who competed in a couple of Grand Slams, lost every time to a guy named Tim, but different Tims every time. And then his older brother, Misha, who is 10 years older than him, is currently number 33 in the world with a career high of 25. And Misha's also obviously a very, very talented player, and in a lot of ways has helped pave the road and served as a mentor to Sasha, which has helped him, I think, have the results that he's had so well in his career. So he's got 6 career titles already as a 20-year-old, and 5 of them were in 2017, including 2 Masters events, which the first was in Rome and the second in Montreal. So the guy can play on all surfaces. He lost in the finals of an ATP grass court event to Roger Federer, which I think we can cut him a little slack on that. And so he's got, 4 hard court titles, 2 clay court titles, and then, he's made a grass court final this year. He's obviously a very legit player. So how would you describe him?
Well, I would call him an all-court player, hesitantly, because he's not great at the net, but he's very solid off of both wings, and he's still very young, so he's still developing his game. Like, he's significantly better in 2017 than he was in 2016.
Yes, and I do agree. I mean, I kind of the same deal. I, like, reluctantly describe him as an all-court player because his volleys aren't great. However, he isn't afraid to move forward. And
that's right. And his brother, it should be pointed out, is a true serve and volley. Like he plays matches where he comes in all the time. Like, first and second, he'll play matches where he comes in on every serve almost.
Yes.
And Zverev is huge. He's 6'6", 6'7", and huge power. Referring to Sasha, not referring to his older brother. His brother's a lefty who's, a measly 6'3". I don't know if he's really 6'3", though.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's the one question I had, too. Like,
I was going to say he's 6'1". I don't feel like he's 6'3" at all.
What are they eating for breakfast in this Zverev household? Because the dad is 6'1", the older brother is supposedly 6'3", and then he's 6'6".
No, he's not 6'3". If he's 6'3", then he's got some terrible posture. And
well, that's possible, but regardless, I'm just saying, okay. Like, there's an anomaly there in terms of Sasha's height. But yeah, I agree. Like, to me, he's kind of describe him as an aggressive baseline player with a fairly all court game. You know, I think as a baseline player, not in the sense of, I mean, he does hit pretty hard, but not in the sense of like a Dominic Thiem who stands, you know, 4 meters behind the baseline ripping ground strokes. I mean, Zverev definitely will step into the court. I mean, he's playing almost all of his shots, all of his ground strokes within 2 meters of the baseline in either direction. So he hits almost as many balls inside the baseline as he does behind the baseline when I'm playing on hard courts. On clay, that changes a little bit. But he's definitely, to me, an all-court player whose volleys aren't quite there yet, but they're serviceable. And he's intelligent enough that when he comes in, his volleys are good enough to get the job done most of the time.
Yeah, and the thing that really matters here, I think, is that his brother's a serving volleyer. He practices with him all the time. He's been practicing with him since he was a kid. I mean, Sasha has been on the tour since he was like 14 years old, just as like a hitting guy.
Right.
So in these terms, what matters is that this is a guy who believes that moving forward is a clear path to victory.
Yes.
So believes that this is something that he needs to be almost as good as his brother at. Probably not as good as Misha.
Right. Well, I mean, it'll take him 10 years to catch up. Yeah, if he's even close, that'll be impressive. Because,
you have very good volleys.
The reality is, and there's a long history of this in the modern game of genuine serving volleys and genuine net attackers taking longer to develop and hitting their peak later, relatively speaking, age-wise, than most of your traditional baseline players. Like the counterpunches tend to peak earlier as a whole. I think that net game will take time to develop for him, especially since he's not going out there and serving volleying all the time. So in terms of in the context of competitive matches, it's going to take him a long time to get a lot of experience hitting volleys in competitive matches because he's not coming in at every point, if that makes sense. So I think it'll get there, but it's going to take a little while. So if we look at the assets of his game, like the positive things he brings to the table, let's start off with the serve because I think it's kind of the foundation in a lot of ways. I mean, he is 6'6", and he does have a very big serve. Like he's hitting that first serve pretty huge.
Yeah, I mean, he's going 130 consistently, and he's going for aces. Like,
yes.
He's not spinning balls then.
No, he's serving for corners. He's not hitting a lot of body serves in the first. So, you know, I mean, I think his serve is definitely an asset. His first serve is formidable. He's not a great spot server yet. Like, his precision is a little lacking, but he's serving with enough velocity that he gets away with it. You know, he's off by a few inches here and there on his spots, but it's still fast enough that even being a couple inches off, a lot of them aren't coming back. And when they are coming back, he's getting what he wants, which is that forehand for a first ball.
Yeah, and it seems that watching him serve, or at least it seems to me clear that his serve is going to continue to improve.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, like, he's got a lot of good framework in place there. And whether or not it improves depends on how much he's actively working on the service technique. Because there are a couple of things about the service technique that I'm not a huge fan of. I actually wrote an article on him. It's on the website if you go and peek at it. I can't remember the title off the top of my head. But essentially it was talking about why Nick Kyrgios, who's significantly shorter, is a significantly better server than Zverev. They're similarly aged. I don't know. There's aspects of the service technique I'm not a huge fan of, but it still is a very strong asset for him. Like, his second serve is good. He's not getting, you know, attacked to the degree that a lot of other players are on the second serve. His first serve is not coming back a lot. When it is, he's in control of the point most of the time. And that sets up, like, this next thing to me, which is he's got a very good forehand. Like, his forehand is amongst the better forehands on the tour right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think of just his ground strokes as being really good.
Yeah, well, I do too. But I think his forehand is more of a weapon than his backhand. I think his backhand is very solid. It's a very good shot. He can, one of the things that I think he can hurt you off both wings, absolutely. But he would rather hurt you off the forehand.
You know, it's interesting. I think personally, he likes his backhand. Like, he just likes hitting it.
Sure.
I'm not sure that... It doesn't seem to me that his team thinks that his backhand is as good as his forehand, but he will make more errors on the forehand side still at this age. But, you know, technically when we look at the stroke, like, the forehand's really good and he's capable of doing a lot with it. Like, he's not as one-dimensional as most of the guys that are that big.
He puts some work on the ball. He'll hit it with a little more spin. It's not like a Cilic or a lot of these bigger guys that I think are a little worried about their movement and really go all out on the forehand side. he's definitely willing and able to work the point, which brings me to this next asset, which, I mean, for a 6'6 guy, he moves well.
His movement is really good. It's
good. It's just good, period. But then when you add the fact that he's 6'6 in there, and it's really good. And those things come together to me a little bit. Like, he has the capacity to be a little more patient inside of points because he moves well and construct a little more than some of the bigger guys. So part of the reason why I think he's being able to have very consistent results is there is a fallback. You know, if his first serve or his second serve gets him that easy ball that he wants for his serve plus one, he absolutely can flatten that forehand out and demolish the ball. But if it doesn't, he's better equipped than most of the guys his height to work his way into the point and construct something. And that's part of the reason why I think he's been able to do as well as he has on clay. You know, he already has two clay court tournaments. He's already won a clay court Masters event.
Yeah, which is no joke.
As a 20-year-old, which is, it's crazy in this day and age. And that brings me to the last point, which is his patterns. Like, I think he plays relatively, I mean, I don't think he's quite there yet, but he plays intelligent tennis. He's not out there, he's not out there without a plan, I'll put it that way. You know, he's coming out in the court, I think he's trying to put points together to varying degrees of success, but there's definitely, a game plan there. There is a sense of direction with his tennis.
You know, that's interesting because I feel like patterns for him, I mean, at his level, I feel like they're more of a liability. I feel like he likes long points. I get the sense that he's waiting around to hit one good shot to open up the court instead of in a disciplined way using patterns that are consistently opening up the court even when he's not hitting like great shots, like his best shots. So where he struggles is when he plays guys that can play short points and still hang there with him.
Right.
Because the thing is, like, if you look at the first three or four balls, he's not sticking to patterns very well, I think. Now, beyond that, I think he starts to actually get good. But it's a big ask to play your best tennis on the tour, you know, playing long points. Like, nobody does that successfully.
Right. Well, but to me, like, when I watch him play, I feel like there's a short window where he doesn't do well. So I think when he gets the ball that he really wants off the first serve, he's fine. Like, yes. I think he executes his serve plus one very well. I think in the longer rallies, there's these shorter rallies where things are not quite there is to me where he has a little bit of a weakness. It's if the serve plus one doesn't go well, I think it takes him like two or three shots to find his way into the point, and then he starts to construct better again. But to me, one thing I will say, though, is why I still think that his patterns are listed patterns as an asset or his tactical acumen as an asset is he's not out there beating himself very often. Part of the reason he's had consistent results is he goes out and he doesn't throw away a lot of points with, oh, my serve plus one didn't work, and he panics and tries to press too hard consistently. He'll keep the ball in play for a couple of shots and then start to put something together. Whereas I think a lot of other guys, even people that are 5-10 years older than him on the tour, are panicking when their serve plus one doesn't go well and pushing too hard, being too aggressive, making sloppy errors. He has matches where he does that, but overall I think he does a good job of staying in points and then finding a way to win it.
Yeah, this is a guy who has a deep, deep-seated confidence. And I think in an interesting way, he's really patient. And that does count for something. So I mean, this is maybe one that I haven't in both buckets, in a sense. Like, his patience could become like a real asset over time. The biggest compliment that I can give Sasha right now is that I'm judging him as a top 10 player. I'm not judging him as a talented 20-year-old. Judging him straight up as a top 10 player, and that's where I'm being hard on him. If I look at him in the context of just being a young guy who's still developing, you know, who's still only halfway there, then, you know, all of these things ultimately are going to become assets to me.
Yeah, fair enough. So things that, I mean, we talked about the volleys already, so I don't think we need to rehash that. Like, these volleys need a little bit of work, but we both think they'll get there. The only two things that stand out to me as far as liabilities in his game outside of the volleying is, one, I think that his positioning on the second serve return is too conservative. You know, he's standing too far back. In fact, most of the time, like, his positioning on his second serve return is very similar to his position on the first serve return. That's something that I've noticed, is he doesn't really back up the way that some of the other guys do. but he also doesn't really step into the court and take time away the way a lot of the guys do.
He really doesn't try and do much different.
Right.
Second to the turn. It's not just that his positioning is the same, because for a lot of people, clearly we can read into their intentions when they change their positioning a lot. But with Sasha, it seems like he has the same intention. He's got the same positioning.
Well, this is the other thing. I mean, he will step up for some people and not for others, which is, you know, I think when he feels, so this is the difference between, I think when he feels like his opponent has a weaker second serve, he absolutely steps in and will be more aggressive on it.
Like he has to do that in order to have a chance to win.
Well, no, I think when he sees blood in the water in the second serve, when he feels like, not like, oh, I feel the pressure to do this, but mm-hmm. when he thinks, oh, I can do this, like I can step up, this guy's got a weak second serve. I think when he perceives the second serve of his opponent as being weak, he will step in and attack it. The problem is, when he doesn't, he won't. And that's an issue, because that's one of the things like we've seen in Fed's turnaround this year. One of the things that he has done is consistently stepped in and attacked second serves, regardless of who the opponent is. And right. and Zverev doesn't quite do that. Like, he'll attack some people and not others. Like, he'll attack Dimitrov, for example. He'll step in and take returns, you know, comfortably inside the baseline against Dimitrov, but then against other people, he won't. So, you know, when you take his return position against, like, Kyrgios, you know, he doesn't move an inch, virtually, for his second serve return. That's the thing. Like, if you go and look at where Fed, the difference when Fed plays Kyrgios, there's a big gap in first and second serve return positions. And mm-hmm. so I think he's just a little conservative. For him, he needs to go out there and attack everybody's second serve, regardless of how good that second serve is, to put that pressure on them.
I think that he'll do more of that in time, in large part because of the team that he has around him. I think his brother does a lot more of that than he does, because his brother is a serving volleyer who's trying to get into the net.
Sure.
And he knows that he's not going to stay back on the baseline with the top 10 guys in the world and win matches.
Right, absolutely.
So I think he's going to see that, he's going to be exposed to that, and I think they're going to be encouraging him to do that. And this is where I look at it, and this is where I do look at Sasha as a young guy who's still developing his game, who's only 20 years old, and say, how good is this guy going to be when he starts really attacking consistently all the second serves against everyone? Mm-hmm. Like, how good is he going to be when he's just more aggressive on his return in general?
But the question to me is he going to do that? I think the odds are good, because he does have that good team around him. But there's also that part to me where there's an underlying mentality. Like, I don't think that this is a strategic adjustment that he's making. I think there is an emotional driving force behind that return positioning where it's like, well, I'm a little afraid of this guy's second serve. And so he backs off. And, oh, I feel like I can attack. And so he steps up. When players, and you know this, and I know this because we've both worked with a lot of players and dealt with this issue, when players are making tactical adjustments because of emotional reasons and feelings, that can be hard to attack. That can be hard to get them to make the adjustments. Because when they get in the moment out there on the big stage, they're going to a lot of times go with their feeling. And they're going to do the thing that makes them feel comfortable.
You know, that's interesting because we've both addressed that directly. And I think one of the things that like sets you apart as a coach is that you'll address the emotional side of something as its own issue worthy of time, which makes it a lot more successful in terms of the outcomes that you're able to get. The thing that concerns me with Sasha is he's being coached by his father. His brother's a major influence. Now, there are other people on his team that we'll talk about later. And those guys, these are great tennis guys, but I think that it's easy for people that are that close to him to sort of get stuck in the same mindset.
Right.
So, like, if he went out and hired, I don't know, like, Yvonne Lendl or somebody, Lendl would probably just walk out there and just say, dude, you're a freaking giant. You hit the piss out of the ball. You need to crush every return. And he would just say, like, you either crush the return or I quit and I'm going to go work with somebody else.
Right.
And that might get it done. Like,
yeah,
it might
for sure.
not beat that hard. I just, because they've had so much success, it makes it less likely.
Yeah, the relationship plays into it too, because, you know, I talk to my kids very differently than I talk to the players that I coach. You know, and there's a reason for that. I hope that he makes that adjustment. And the other thing that I see as a liability for him is that he can be a little volatile when he's on the court. Like, he gets into a negative headspace and gets kind of sulky, a little bit petulant out there sometimes.
Come on, he's German-Russian.
I know, but he loses matches because of this, you know, and that to me is a real liability, because if you can get in his head, to me he comes across as a little bit of a sore loser sometimes. Like, when things start to go wrong, he's not fighting, he's fighting himself.
This is where I have to look at him as a 20-year-old.
Yeah, sure. No, absolutely.
I think as a 20-year-old, coming from his background, coming from an intense tennis family, a Russian-German family, I think of him as being mature beyond his years and as exhibiting good emotional control. Now, he absolutely has matches where he fails to exhibit emotional control and where he loses when he doesn't need to lose. That's true of any 20-year-old. So the only guy that comes to mind that I think maybe, like, Rafa did a better job.
Hewitt, too.
I don't know if I agree with that. That would be a whole other conversation. Because Hewitt was super intense.
Yes. Guy hardly lost a match for 18 months, almost the same age that Zverev is now.
Look, I think Hewitt was playing better tennis. I'm not sure that it was due to his emotional control. So I think that would be a hard thing to compare for me. It wouldn't be a short conversation. More importantly for me is just, if we look at him with what he comes from, and even look at his older brother, who his older brother had some real ups and downs throughout his career. He hasn't found stability in his career until, and this is where the team comes into play, until his brother surpassed him in the rankings. And he started working with his younger brother's strength coach. Okay.
Who is, by the way, probably a name you should mention.
His younger brother's strength coach is Jez Green, who, if you don't know Jez, or if you haven't heard us talk about him before, is the guy who built Andy Murray from a scrawny, weak, you know, brilliant, like, tactical tennis player who couldn't crack an egg into the guy who got to number one in the world. He walked away from Murray a few years ago. I want to say Sasha was 15 or 16 years old. But that's been the big thing in Sasha's career, is that he had this rock behind him to keep his body going. And then as Misha got stronger working with Jez, and obviously having a better training partner when, you know, Sasha got up into the top 30 in the world, Misha's career really found a lot of stability.
I think also, you know, the fact that he wasn't hurt, because, I mean, Misha struggled a lot with injuries, and that really, really hampered his career in a big way.
In a very simple, and maybe this is oversimplistic, but I think it's not to me. It might sound oversimplistic, but I don't think it is. In a very fundamental way, I don't think Misha was strong enough to play the kind of game that he needs to play in order to be a top 40 player. He needs to be crashing the net. He needs to hustle and be explosive, and he needs to be able to do it day in and day out.
Right.
And earlier in his career, he could do it sometimes. He could do it maybe for a couple of days, and then he'd suffer the consequences from it.
Sure.
And so that's been the difference in his ranking. I don't – like, his level of tennis really hasn't improved that much. It's just that he's able to play at a higher level more often, and lo and behold, that's when your ranking goes up.
Fair enough. Let's not turn this into the Misha Zverev.
Back to Sasha. It's hard to separate these guys because Sasha's career really is the result of the team. What we're saying is just, I think that he's doing a really good job coming from where he's coming from. I think he's on a path with a good direction.
Right. And I'm going to withhold judgment on that because, I mean, at the end of the day, this is a liability. Whether or not he learns to do a better job, that's, you know, very much an emotional question. And as much as he's working with Jez Green and getting his body right, that's great. I don't know the type of work he's doing to get his head right. And especially when you have your father as a coach, that's a very complicated relationship. I worry a little bit about his ability to get out there and not get into that negative headspace and not be, you know, have that volatility. You know, I sure hope that he does, but there's a part where, you know, I do wonder about that. Is this going to be like a 3 or 4 or 5 year process for him to be,
yes,
out there and at the top of the game that long? No, but I mean, really, of course, I mean, look, the work never ends, and you know that,
right.
And I know that. But my point is, where this stops being a liability, is it going to take him a year I'm in the top 10 now, and I'm settled down, or is it going to take him 5 years because I'm out there and I'm throwing tantrums, and eventually I'm mature enough?
I think it's going to take him more than a year. I think Jez Green is a great influence. Hugo Gravel is his physio, who was an ATP physio for like 15 or 20 years. who's also a very good calming influence. You know, I think his dad seems to be a fiery character, so that may slow things down in a sense. But Sasha really seems to believe that his father is a, I mean, he said he was the best tennis coach in the world. Like, that's what he seems to believe.
Right.
Because, you know, he's got two kids that made it to the top 30. I mean, who has two guys in the top 30, right? So that's a big deal. You know, I might want to look over on the women's side of the game for some other examples, but that's a whole nother story. So anyway, I don't want to get caught up into this. The emotional control issue for Sasha is going to be a really interesting one. At the end of the day, he's really fun to watch. I think he's becoming more fun and more entertaining to watch. So I'd recommend definitely keeping an eye on him, and especially look for him when he's playing against marquee names and big matchups that you really know. I mean, he really tends to bring some good tennis in those moments.
Yes, he does. So if we look forward for Sasha, this guy, I mean, this is a no-brainer. He's going to be a top 10 player for the next 10 years. You know, assuming he doesn't suffer some grievous injury or, you know, pull a Bjorn Borg and just walk away from the game out of the middle of nowhere. He's going to be a top 10 guy for the next 10 years. I think he's going to end up winning multiple Grand Slams. Just how many will depend a little bit on some other factors. I mean, we've got other players that are coming up and starting to come up. And, you know, obviously there's going to be a transitional window. I mean, Rafa can't play forever. Fed maybe can play forever, but probably won't choose to. you know, so there's going to be this window. I think he's going to have a great window of opportunity when you're going to have, I think, Murray, Djokovic, Fed, and Nadal all leaving the game in a relatively short span of time. And he's probably going to be 23 years old and playing absolutely great and have his team, and he's got experience at that point. And he's going to be very, very uniquely situated to I think, just nab a handful of slams in a relatively short period of time. So I think that's going to happen.
In honor of Hanukkah, I'm going to put the kibosh on that. Okay?
Okay, kibosh away.
There's no way that Djokovic is going to be gone when he's 23 years old. I don't see it.
We'll see.
I mean, that's a whole other conversation in itself, but I'm just going to put that out there. Okay? Andre Agassi came out like a couple weeks ago, and they were asking him, you know, how he felt about working with Djokovic in Monte Carlo in the off season. And his quote was that Novak is going to redefine what it means to be a tennis player when he's 36. Now, he could be wrong. Okay. He could be wrong, but I'm siding with Agassi on this one.
I will be shocked if that happens.
I am right there with Andre on this one. I am just following the leader. Okay. And I'm making no bones about it. So
coming on the heels of what Federer just did as a 36-year-old.
Well, that's the thing.
I got to laugh a little bit at that. I mean,
Well, Federer has redefined it.
Right. And so what? Djokovic's going to come along and redefine it again. But look, anyways, we'll save that for another discussion.
The point is, I don't see Djokovic being out of the game at that point. Now, is Federer going to be out of the game at that point? He'd be about 40 years old. That's a really good question, right? I don't see Rafa being out of the game either yet at that point. But what's probably more interesting to me is, I think that Zverev is the safest bet of anyone under 25 years old to win multiple Grand Slams.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He is the safest guy to choose to do that. He has tools. He has weapons. The thing that we haven't talked about explicitly yet that we've been, you know, dancing around the bushes is that this is a very, very professional tennis player already, who has a team around him that is one of the top five on the tour, okay? And he hasn't been doing it just for the last 6 months or for the last year, but he's been doing it for the last 4 or 5 years.
Right. This guy had a great team around him when he was 15 years old. And you've got guys like Kyrgios and, I mean, shoot, we could go through the top 30. There's guys who have been out on tour and been making a lot of money and been very successful for 5-10 years who still haven't managed to put together the team that Zverev has made the effort, or his parents have made the effort to put together for him before he'd even won a tournament.
Well, contrast him with Kyrgios, I think, is really good, because Nick is a young guy also who has a tremendous amount of respect for Leighton Hewitt. But Leighton has to, I mean, it's almost like pulling teeth for Leighton to really get influence in how Nick goes about doing things as in his daily behavior, okay? Right. They're not pulling teeth with Zverev. Like, no. When Jez tells him this is what you're going to do, he's doing it. And with Hugo, when Hugo says this is how you need to take care of your body, he's doing it. And he's only 20 years old, and they're going to add more people to that team, and it's going to get even better. It's not going to get worse.
This is not a guy who struggles with internal motivation and struggles with internal discipline. I mean, he very much contrasts with Kyrgios in this regard. And, yeah, he has surrounded himself with a great team. As you said, I mean, I think that he, if you're going to pick any player who hasn't already won a slam to win multiple slams, it has to be Sasha Zverev. And if you think it's somebody else has a better chance of doing that, then I think you're a little bit crazy. But I am going to say this before we go on. There's still some things he does need to figure out, because for all of his great results this year, I think that we do need to temper things a little bit, because one, his Grand Slam results to date have been rather mediocre, right? Yeah. He hasn't made it past the fourth round of any slam, and he's only made the fourth round once. So that's a little bit of a problem. I mean, if we look through this year, I mean, I'll cut him some slack losing to Rafa in five at the Australian Open, right? That's kind of because Rafa was ranked nine at the time. That's a rough draw, and obviously Rafa made the finals, so we can cut him some slack there. But he goes out first round of the French to Fernando Verdasco, which, you know, I mean, it's a respectable loss, but this is not the Verdasco of 5 years ago. Verdasco is kind of hovering around 40 in the rankings now.
But we know Verdasco, like, nobody wants to play Fernando in the first round.
No, of course you don't. But I'm just saying, this is not the Fernando Verdasco 5 years ago. And so that is an important piece of that puzzle. And, you know, if we go through the results, like, so, you know, he lost to Rio and Wimbledon round of 16. We go to the US Open, and, you know, he'd obviously just come off, he'd won Montreal at this point. And then he goes and loses to Borna Koric at the US Open in the round of 64. One of the things that stands out to me about him so far is that there's a part where he's very consistently winning rounds in almost every tournament that he plays. The issue is that he's not beating still a lot of the, like, he's consistently having losses to people that he shouldn't be losing to. So for a guy who finished the year ranked number four, I mean, if we just run down some of his losses really quickly, you know, I mean, he loses to Darcis, who's ranked 58, loses to Gasquet, ranked 22, TM at 8, sure, Mahut, who's ranked 54, loses to Kyrgios, who's ranked 16, Kyrgios again, you know, Chung, who's ranked 94 at the time, Pella, who's ranked 158, this is in Munich, Cuevas, who's ranked 27, you know, Verdasco, you know, there's all these losses to guys that are ranked in the 20s, 30s, 40s to 90s.
Look, you make a really good point here. I want to jump in on it because I was at the US Open match where he lost to Koric. And it's not just that he lost to Koric, but it was how he did it. Koric basically was grinding up the middle. And Zverev just didn't have enough. Like, he didn't play well. He made some errors. He would play a point with good patterns and then play a point with terrible patterns. It was like he didn't have his identity as a player enough, and his youth really showed there.
Right.
But this is exactly why I have him as a top 10 guy, because his record in the Grand Slams in 2016 was 5 wins and 4 losses. In 2017, 6 wins and 4 losses. So this is a guy who has not really done anything at slams.
Right, and he's still number four in the world.
Yeah. So it's maybe a little counterintuitive. Like, I don't think he has a problem on the big stage. I mean, you look at someone like Del Potro or like Kyrgios, who loves to play big matches and take out the giants of the game, but can't win big tournaments or hasn't won the Masters 1000s events yet. Here's a 20-year-old kid who's won a hardcourt 1000 and a clay court 1000. Like, it's like he's a simmering boil right now. Like, there's no way that I would predict him to go 6-4 in 2018.
Right,
in the
you would
slams.
Hope not. But the other thing that I just do want to point out, though, is at both of his Masters wins, his draws were rather friendly. So
got some,
I mean, you know, in Rome, where he wins his clay court Masters, at Kevin Anderson, Victor Troicki. Fognini's a solid win, but depends which Fabio Fognini shows up there. You know, his quarterfinals, Milos Raonic on clay. Then he gets John Isner, you know, and then he plays a not
Isner
great...
Isner was playing unbelievable.
He was, but it's still Isner on clay. I mean, you're talking
he
about a giraffe.
Everybody. Isner loves clay. It's his favorite surface. I know that it's totally counterintuitive, but he loves it. So, and I mean, look, your point is well taken here, but like, look at someone like Del Potro, who's been on the tour for 10 years. Like, he's gotten tournaments with good draws. Guys don't win the tournaments with good draws.
No, I get you. But I'm just saying that in Montreal, same kind of deal. You know, he gets Gasquet, Kyrgios a good win, but then he gets Kevin Anderson, Shapovalov, and then an injured Roger Federer. For all that, he did have an impressive year. His two Masters events wins were both kind of a little bit fortunate to me.
Well, I don't see him winning two Masters events in 2018. I want to be clear about that. But
yeah,
I do see him winning. I see him winning 8 to 10 matches in the Slams overall, not in one.
Yeah, no, I agree. Well, I hope he doesn't win 10 matches in one Slam. That would be
he's
impressive.
Not coming through quali. He's not in qualies anymore.
Yeah, no, he is not. So, look, I my projection basically for this coming year is, I mean, I think he's going to win 2 to 3 titles, and I think that he's going to end up the year ranked around number 7.
That's interesting. I think coming in at number 4, I have him finishing in the top 6. It's kind of tough for me to figure out how, but it's really, I'm just going to tell you that's going straight off of a feeling.
Yeah.
So I could be wrong on it, and you know, if I'm wrong, then I'll stand corrected. But this is a guy who he's used to winning. I mean, he was a number one ITF kid. He's been on the tour for ages and ages, training with top 20 and 30 and 40 guys. I mean, since he was like a 14-year-old teenager. You know, I mean, the ATP tagged him as the star tomorrow a couple of years ago.
Yeah, you know, but this is the year where things are going to get real, because now he's coming to rank number 4. But you look at all the players that are coming back, how deep the top 20 is. I mean, I think this is going to be the rude awakening that he needs. I don't think it'll be really that rude of an awakening, but I think this will be the year where reality hits home and he'll have a little drop in the rankings. He won't win as many tournaments. But this will also be the year, I think, that forges him and gets him exactly where he needs to be. But look, you've got to do better than that. We've gone. The last two predictions I've given a number.
I said
I'm
six.
Saying, no, you said top 6.
No, I said 6.
Okay, you're going straight up 6. Okay.
I'm saying I think he's going to finish 6.
I needed to pin you. I think if we
you're,
go back.
You're pinned a number so twice in a row now. So as much as I don't like doing that,
you got to step
I'm
up.
Pinning a number at 6. Because, like I said, like, that's not the way that I think. That's not the way that, you know.
Well, of course, I mean, look, there's a lot of
approach the game. But I'm putting him at 6. That's what my feeling is.
Yeah.
I feel like he's going to be at 6, which actually is a drop in the rankings. Let's keep that in mind. That means he finishes, instead of at 4, he finishes at 6. I think he's going to get more wins in the slams. I don't have him winning a slam this year. A lot of people, I think, have him, you know, light fire.
I don't have him
winning a slam. But, I could see him besting Andy Murray on his comeback. I could see him besting Wawrinka. I think he's going to struggle against Novak. I think he's going to continue to struggle against Fed.
Yeah, I mean, those are just bad matchups for him.
With Rafa. But, you know, he's going to have to play a lot of these big guys because he's a top 4 ranking now.
Yeah.
So if those guys do well, he'll be there.
My concern is that I'm not sure he's going to be there for them. You know, I think next year we're still going to see some losses to people that he quote-unquote shouldn't lose to, and he's not going to be there in the semis of the slams. He's not going to be there in the quarters of the slams.
Well, I think he's going to be seeing them in the fourth round and in the quarters, and I think the thing that's really going to change for him this year is I expect him just to have more stability overall wins. Like, I don't expect he's going to lose to Coric at the U.S. Open again. Like, I don't see him playing that match again. I think that was a kick in the face. I think he was embarrassed to lose that match. Like I say, I was there watching him. That was the kind of match that he will walk away from saying, I have to do something different.
Right.
And not everyone does that. And again, this goes to his professionalism and to what makes Sasha Zverev or Alexander Zverev Jr. Like, this is what makes him. This is what has gotten him to be a top 5 player at 20 years old. This is not a like, oh, everyone responds this way kind of thing. This is specific to him. So those are my expectations. That's pretty specific, I think.
Yeah, I'll give you that. If you just call him straight at number 6, that's good enough for me. Well, folks, let us know what you think. You might agree, disagree. You can reach out to us.
Email us. Tell me how crazy I am for not picking Sasha Zverev to finish number 1 in the world in 2018 and all the reasons why he's going to do it. I'd love to hear about it. Jacob@tacticaltennis.com.
Glenn@tacticaltennis.com. You can tweet at me at Glenn S. Hill.
You can tweet @tactical tennis, and you can find us on Instagram @tactical tennis as well.
All right, folks, have a great one.
Take it easy.